everybody, get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20. Because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the food and wine variety show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. I am minus Nikki Nellis today. She's off at a family event, so I'm flying the plane solo, and I am really, you know, my star's going to shine today. This is going to be fun. Want to remind everybody, we're still in the middle of Women's History Month, and we've got a bunch of power women in the studio, some power dudes, too. I don't want to leave anybody out. We're going to have a lot of fun. Our drink segment for this show is great because we love our cocktails on this show, and who better to serve them up than one of the spirits industry's leading, I say leading lights. She is the entrepreneur's entrepreneur. It's Chanel Turner. She founded Global Alliance Distribution, and she also is the mother of Foudre Vodka with some of the coolest bottles anywhere on any shelf, in any bar, anywhere. She's brought in her friend Kimberly LaRose. She's the co-founder of Wisher Vodka. It's a woman-owned distillery, and it's distributed by Chanel's company, right? So we're going to be hearing from them. Last night, we had dinner at Kevin Tien's Moon Rabbit, and it was awesome. And one of the things that makes it so awesome, aside from Kevin, is Susan Bay, who's one of DC's leading pastry chefs. She's amazing. She's amazing. And she's in with Rochelle Cooper, who is also amazing. Rochelle is a pastry chef at Duck and the Peach, La Colina, and the Wells. That's Hollis Wells Silverman's trifecta up on Capitol Hill. Amazing meals. I love the Wells, is one of my favorite bars in the city. It's awesome. So they're in. They've got a special event coming up later this month, and it's kind of revolves around tea, but there are going to be some great desserts there too, and some amazing pastry chefs participating from all over the country. So you'll hear about that. Not a power woman, but definitely a power guy. Michelin star awarded chef, somm, and yachtsman Troy Knapp. Troy, is back on the show. Troy brings a passion for great food and wine to a different kind of world-class dining experience. He's the owner and, I love your title, experience curator, of Sea Table DC. That's his company, and they've launched something called Sip and Sail, which is ultra-fine dining in a beautiful yacht, a sailboat, on the water, on the Potomac, at the wharf. And we're going to hear all about that as well. And as I said, it's still Women's History Month, and the famous guy to take the stage on March 17th is our old buddy, who's not a woman. Where are you, Brian? Brian Nixon. Brian is the man behind the bar, I guess you'd say, at McClellan's Retreat. And one of the things we want to talk about is St. Patrick's Day, because I'm trying to figure out how that became a thing. It's a good excuse to drink, but Brian is with us as well. Let's start off with Chanel. Chanel, give me a little 411 on you, because your story's amazing.
Little 411. So I started in this industry when I was 25, back in 2009. I created Foudre Vodka. Foudre Vodka is a ultra-premium pomegranate-infused vodka. No added artificial flavors or sweeteners. It is a gluten-free kosher product. Very unique. Foudre is a play on the French word for lightning. I know you guys can't see the bottle, but hence the bottle. It's a lightning bolt.
It looks like a building in the meatpacking district in New York. That's what it looks like.
It definitely does. You know, since I started Foudre, I also branched off into the distribution part of the industry and started distributing spirits for other brand owners since 2016. So growing our distribution portfolio, we have amazing products in our portfolio, three of which will be showcased here today. Wisher is here physically, and I'm also showcasing HHB Spoke Gin, and a new brand in our portfolio, Castle Bridge Wine. They're pretty new. They just got into our portfolio this month, and so I'm just excited.
You know? All right. Yeah. Kimberly, talk a little bit about you. How'd you get into the biz?
Well, I was actually diagnosed with Crohn's disease, and that inspired
That's a good
this
way to
entire
get into
project.
The business.
I tried to make something good out of it. Yeah, so I can't digest wheat or corn, so I was at a party, and I couldn't enjoy anything there. So I called my friend Emily, and we decided we're going to make something that everyone could enjoy. And we decided to make a vodka distilled from sugar beets. And we lab test.
Smart.
And, so everyone can sip.
I can hear that call. Hey, how do I get hammered without messing up my stomach? Right. So what led you to beets?
Honestly, it was the taste. So we went to, we visited about 60 distilleries and found the product we want, just learned about the industry and fell in love with the taste of the beets and the quality that we found with it. It lends to a little bit of sweetness, even though it's sugar-free in the final product. Sugar beets are naturally really sweet. So
Is that what we're going to taste first?
We are going to taste Fisher
right.
today.
Great. But later on, I want to talk about distilleries in general and women-owned distilleries, because when the pandemic hit, all of a sudden there was this blossoming of distilleries all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
And now it seems two have closed recently in D.C., and the field may be a little crowded. And I want to talk about what happens there when the winnowing out process hits an industry, how you stay afloat.
Yeah.
So we'll get into that. So let's get our first sip, and let's talk to Susan Bay from Moon Rabbit and Rochelle Cooper from, you've got three restaurants I got to mention each time, La Colina, The Wells, and Duck and the Peach up on Capitol Hill. So first of all, again, last night's dinner was knockout.
Thank you.
Talk a little bit about your, you know, how you got here. Because you're an artist too, and I, you know, your desserts are works of art. They're beautiful and delicious. But how did all this happen for you?
So I started out, I was born and raised in California. So I worked around in restaurants in Los Angeles. During the pandemic, Kevin Tian reached out to me via social media. We've been following each other for a very long time. He said, "Hey, do you want to move to D.C. and be my pastry chef?" And I said, "Absolutely." So we've been joined at the hips ever since.
Now, you're a James Beard Award semifinalist, right?
Yes.
Okay. Was that all? Did sort of fame hit when you started working with Kevin?
There was quite a bit of traction once we opened up in Penn Quarter. Before that, Kevin's always, you know, been in the spotlight and all of that. So it's always been there. But more importantly, it hit during our reopening as solo standing restaurant.
All right. And Rochelle, let's talk a little bit to you, because you're a busy girl up on Capitol Hill. And I know you're a new mom, too. So talk a little bit about, now you've been nominated for Pastry Chef of the Year at the Rammies twice, right?
That's correct.
Not bad. And, you know, talk a little bit about your background, too.
So I moved to D.C., I want to say in like 2014, I actually started working out at Range.
You were with Brian, right?
By Brian Balsaggio, yes. And I kind of worked my way downtown, working at Minibar as a cook there, and worked my way up with the Jose Group to be R&D pastry chef for their team that kind of travels the world and opens up concepts. And as I started to kind of settle down and try to make a family happen, I found Hollis Silverman and Katarina Petanito with Eastern Point Collective, and felt like opening up restaurants more locally was going to work much more.
Well, the concept up there, too, it's really cool, because basically under one roof you have two restaurants and a bar, and it's like a little mini mall for great dining.
Yeah, I was kind of spoiled working for Jose, because our R&D kitchen is right around the corner from Haleo, China Chilcano, Zetania, Oyamel, and I always love playing with different types of cuisine, so it was pretty enticing to see a concept that I could kind of stretch my abilities with different things.
All right, so let's transition to what the big event that's coming. You guys are hosting Moon Rabbit Tea on the 24th, correct?
Yes. So on the 24th, we're hosting a ladies' afternoon tea and dim sum. We're gathering pastry chefs from the East Coast, from New York, Pennsylvania, even in local D.C., and we're all going to contribute to a charity to raise money for House of Ruth.
Which is great for women who have been abused.
Yes.
And who are homeless.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's for a great cause. It's going to be really great to be able to work alongside some wonderful pastry chefs and women.
But what was the impetus for this? Because that takes a lot of work to pull this together. And it also takes, for the folks coming in from out of town, they're giving up time at work or free time. So how long has this been in the works?
This has been in the works for about 2 months, I'd say. Yeah. Just rallying the many talented pastry chefs we have.
Well, tell us about some of them.
Okay.
Pull out your list.
I just want to get make sure. So Caroline Schiff from Gage and Tolner, she will be joining us. She is from New York. Isabel Koss from D.C.
From
Pasquale and Latouse. Emily Riddle from Machine Shop in Philadelphia. Alicia Wong from Albi and Yellow. Yoon Jung Oh from Bresca Jaunt. And, of course, Rochelle, who's right next to me, Duck and Peach. And Rose Nguyen from Rose Ave Bakery.
All right. I think we have to take a break. Yes. All right. We're going to be right back on Foodie and the Beast. We're going to talk to these folks a little more. Stay with us. You know, Nick, back in the day when I worked for Hex, the Hex warehouse is over on New York Avenue, and we hated being sent over there to do stuff because there was nowhere to eat for lunch. It was a wasteland.
Well, not anymore. So the Ivy City area has exploded. And, you know, the very first restaurant over there was the Tavern at Ivy City Smokehouse. Now, this is a great neighborhood restaurant, but it's also a destination restaurant. First of all, they smoke all their seafood, and that is incredible. But it also is a huge kitchen that does amazing dishes, fresh seafood, great burgers, the whole deal. But the space is what you really need to check out. An amazing outdoor patio where you want to sit and have cocktails. They do live music there all the time and other live shows. And there is a great event space. So if you're looking for a place to hold a wedding or have a party, you definitely want to check out the Tavern at Ivy City Smokehouse.
Well, it's about 20 years too late, but now I have a good reason to go over to Ivy City and the Tavern at Ivy City Smokehouse. All right, we're back on Foodie and the Beast, and we're talking to Susan Bay and Rochelle Cooper. Bay. It's a beautiful name.
Thank you.
It is. It really is. Isn't that what they call Beyonce?
Bay.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So I do want to talk more about the event. We're going to do that at the end of the segment. But talk a little bit about, I mean, again, I had dinner there last night. Mm-hmm. Your desserts look like works of art. Mm-hmm. They taste like works of art. But how do you, both of you, how do you come up with what you do?
I feel that nostalgia kind of resonates a lot with me. I like to think about flavors and memories and stuff. So actually what I brought here today is kind of reminiscent of a Ferrero Rocher, one of my favorite candies. To
always see their commercials at
unwrap.
Holiday time.
But it doesn't have to be like a specific like candy or something. Sometimes it's just a texture or a flavor. I use sarsaparilla root in one of my toffee sauces, and that kind of makes it taste like a root beer float. And I just like kind of want to like pull those nuances from people's brain so that way when they're eating it, they're like, this makes me feel happy. I'm not sure why, but it does. And like desserts just make me happy.
Well, I always, you know, when we get mixologists in there, I ask them, you know, because there's a lot of pressure, I think, to come up with something new on a regular basis. And I always sense that they're like mad chemists or mad scientists. Mm-hmm. Is that, I mean, are you in the kitchen and you say, I wonder what these things are going to taste like in combination? And I've never seen anything like that before. Is that what you do? And you're.
Yeah. I also take a lot of feedback from my team. So actually, when we were trying this dessert, my sous chef was like, hey, I think this needs potato chips. Don't be mad at me. And I'm like, what do you mean potato chips? And I was like, actually, I know what we need. And I grabbed the sunchoke chips from our beef cheek and I put them on. And it was like the perfect crispy like crunch. And like so really listening to what people are saying and like kind of finding a way to like use that feedback in a way that makes sense because it actually adds like a nice vegetal note to the dish. But yeah, like I think working with a team, more heads are better than one, you know.
That's
what
right.
Do you think?
I completely agree. Yeah, I think you hit it right on the nail. For a lot of chefs in general, we want to evoke the feelings of nostalgia. So these memories are what we want to recreate and present to everyone else and have them enjoy.
Well, what we had last night, I mean, a lot of it looked like trompe l'oeil. It looked like, you know, it was one thing, but it was another.
Right.
You know, is that part of you? I mean, I know you're an artist, too. Mm-hmm. Do you paint and then draw your inspiration from what you painted to create a dessert that resembles that?
Correct. Yeah. So a lot of my inspiration comes from nature. I think I've emphasized this on many occasions.
You're a nature girl.
I am a nature girl, yes. So first of all, it starts with flavors, starts with the memories, with the flavors. And then from there, I kind of tie in nature to see how it can look organic and beautiful at the same time and evoke what the dessert is trying to be in itself.
So what does it take? What does it take to come up with that final product? I mean, what we had, there was something last night that it looked like it was around, it almost looked like a thin sheet of ice on top of what looked like seaweed. It was good, whatever it was, but I couldn't break it apart.
So you had the seaweed dessert, and that is made out of pandan panna cotta, mm-hmm. vegan, with a stabilizer extracted from seaweed. There is a confit sea lettuce in the center, coconut foam, and chocolate streusel around it. The ice on top was coconut ice and lime. So
somebody give me a drill cup. Quick. Yeah.
But yes, the most intriguing part about that dessert, I think, is the seaweed in itself.
All right, great. Well, before we let you guys go, I want to go back to the Moon Rabbit Tea and talk again. Give us the basics, how we get tickets, all of that, please.
So Moon Rabbit is hosting a ladies' afternoon tea and dim sum. There will be small bites and desserts created by all pastry chefs. You could find us on our website, Moon Rabbit DC, or DokiDokiHospitality.com. You can find us on our Instagram at Moon Rabbit DC, and the link will be provided.
Great. And Rochelle, I imagine you'll have your baby on one hip and whipping up, yeah?
I have a really supportive family that will happily take care of my cute little Leo. But I'll be busy with the girls. It's girls' day.
That'll be fun. All right. Well, thank you both very much. Let's go back to Chanel. Where are you, Chanel? Your first baby before the distribution company was Foudre, wasn't it?
Yes, it
was.
Well,
talk about that. I mean, again, were you a distiller before that? You know, how did all this happen? Because if I remember correctly, it was kind of a pandemic thing, wasn't it?
Well, no, well before the pandemic.
Before
so Foudre started in 2009.
No, I don't remember spit, obviously.
It started in 2009. We actually entered the market in 2012, finally obtaining distribution. That's one of the hardest things to obtain once you create a brand, right? Is to actually get it to market and have a distributor pick it up. We faced some challenges initially and then finally got distribution here in Maryland. And then as we slowly started to gain market share, we learned that, some of the distributors aren't in your best interest or do not have your best interest. And so we looked into getting our own wholesaler's license so we can self-distribute. And we obtained that and we started self-distributing Foudre here in D.C. and Maryland and started growing the brand here in this market. Now we're in Texas, California, most recently Florida, actually, within the last 2 weeks. And so we're continuing to grow. Our biggest market to date is Singapore, still to date. And they happily sell Foudre there for $91.
Because they look at that bottle. They look at that bottle and they think it's one of their buildings.
That's exactly what they think. What they think.
And Kim, I want to get back to you because you know, we talked about it, but, you know, because of dietary restrictions that relate to your, you know, to having Crohn's disease, are you marketing your, you know, Witcher vodka that way? Are you saying to people that, you know, it's great no matter what? This is delicious, by the way.
Yeah, I mean,
But are you, is that your handle for marketing?
Yeah, absolutely. We've partnered with the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation in Maryland and DC and big supporters of theirs. And, you know, that's definitely our focus, but really it's just it's a high quality premium vodka that anyone can enjoy. We distill it 7 to 9 times. We've won several awards. We were just named, really excited about this. We were just named one of the top 6 brands to know by the Bartender Spirit Awards. And in an independent silent study by Seton Foods, in a blind study, they compared aroma and flavor, and we beat out all the top-selling brands. So we're really proud of those things and proud of our product.
They're going to be gunning for you.
So for us, it's just bringing a great product to the market, not just for the gluten-free and grain-free, but it's about bringing something great and transparent for everybody.
Good point. Now, what are you serving next?
Oh, Well, upcoming next will be Foudre's cocktail. We're going to showcase what we call the white race car. So that's up.
White race car. All right, I'm ready.
That's interesting.
All right, well, let's go to C with Troy Knapp. Troy, you were on the show many moons ago.
Right.
But you didn't have this. Troy is a Michelin star awarded chef. He's a Somme. He's a yachtsman. I've never been called a yachtsman. I'd love to be a yachtsman.
We'll get you out there.
And he has a company called Sea Table DC, and he's launched what is a really stunning, because I've seen the pictures, of an intimate fine dining experience on the water here in DC. Hit it. Give me a little of your background and then how all this happened.
Yeah, so I was in the hotel industry for 30 plus years. Had a long run with Hyatt Hotels, and it brought me to the East Coast. I was at the Park Hyatt and Blue Duck Tavern for 17, 18, and 2019. And that's when I was on the show last. We're talking
right, with
tea,
Brian,
I think, last.
Right, Brian McBride?
He was, you know, a predecessor. Yeah. He kind of set the tone. He, you know, there was a great level of pedigree that came to that hotel, and I was lucky to be a part of it for my time. I had left to the Conrad Hotel when that opened as a food and beverage director.
I remember you there, too.
And then, with the rest of the world, we shut it down and came back in limited capacity and went through that for a while. At one point, I just said, you know what, I woke up and I thought, I might have the pieces to make something happen here. And I kind of turned to the community, the food community, the food writers, and said, if I did this crazy idea, what could I get some support in helping me get it out there? And I was just embraced with open arms, and I launched this idea, which was called Sip and Sail, because I didn't really know. You know, I thought I'd lean into more of the wine piece of it, but
sure.
It really quickly became one experience. It's 4 to 6 courses aboard with paired wines. And I launched that in 22 and had just a bustling season. We sold pretty much everything out.
Well, I want to get into the nitty-gritty of it. Who is the chef, first of all?
That's me.
You're cooking all the food.
Yes, I do it. I cook I treat it like a catering event, essentially. So I have a kitchen in the mess hall. Al Goldberg and team up there are fantastic, and I work out of there to set it all up. And then it's on the back end, it's a catering experience. I have an alcoholic beverage license to support that. However, on the front end, it's very seamless, and from a guest experience, you can click through on Talk and pick your experience, book your reservation online.
All right, well, let's take it from literally standing on the dock, talk about the ship, and talk about what happens when we get on board.
Yeah, so we would meet you up. We're right next to Hell's Kitchen at the wharf is our location. We have a great spot there at the Oasis.
Is he yelling
Marina.
At you out the window?
No, I haven't seen him there yet.
Okay,
but
good.
Yeah, we'll.
What are you doing?
He's welcome. He can come aboard. We'll take him out. So we welcome our guests up top next to Hell's Kitchen, and then we get them signed in. We bring them down, welcome them on the vessel. We host up to 6 maximum on the vessel. Crew Class A is the name.
Mm-hmm.
She's a French-built vessel, and the Crew Class A is in recognition of the 1855 classification, all the great chateaux and maisons producing all the beautiful wine in the world. She was named that long before I even had this idea, so it kind of came together quite organically. Having an affection for wine, Crew Class A was her name naturally. So guests are welcomed. We do a really fun champagne. We always start with champagne, get them comfortable. And then we get underway and we start. I have 3 of my captains are females, just to make a mention of that for this great month that we're recognizing our women in power.
That's kind of sucking up, I just want to say. That's all right. Keep going.
But it's a unique, there's not, you know, it's really a male dominated, you know, to have captains and, you know, things like that. So I got 3 of them that are amazing. And so there's 2 of us on the vessel. I move into service, and I basically serve in 4 to 6 courses while pairing wines through a 2.5-hour experience. We turn the motors off, and the idea is just to get under sail, because that's where the beauty is at, is when you're pushing by the wind.
But I also want to say that, because I've seen the photos, you're not sitting at a picnic table. You know, you're sitting
right.
I mean, you could be in the finest of fine dining restaurants.
Yeah. That was the idea, is really to take to make it a restaurant experience on the water. You know, we're recognized with the wharf in the directory with the restaurants as a destination for a restaurant, and that was the idea. This is what's working. This is what seems to fit. It's a restaurant. And you know, I had a joke after a rough night in the industry. We always talk, wouldn't it be great to have a one table restaurant? And somehow I ended up with a one-table restaurant.
That's good.
It's my dream. So
talk
it's
about
been a pleasure. Just
the menu, because the menu is pretty cool.
Yeah. So the menu is, it's 4 to 6 courses. Two courses are small, individually served. And then you get into these expansive courses, which are meant to be shared. You're just with your friends. You're not, you know, there's never any guests we put together. So you're only with who you bring, whether it's a date situation or an anniversary, or you're bringing some friends, and we do up to 6 aboard Crew Class A. And so the 3rd and 4th courses are meant to be shared. One is focused on all craft charcuterie and cheeses, focusing on the local creameries and artisans. And then the 4th course is all seafood.
And you also have there are different cruises. Well, mm-hmm. actually, why don't we take a break now and we can talk about that, because you've got an oyster-themed cruise.
Right.
And oysters and champagne. All right, this is David Nellis on Foodie and the Beast. I miss my wife, but she's having fun, probably having champagne right now. I had to say that. But we'll be right back. All right, we're back on Foodie and the Beast. We're talking to Troy Knapp, who is the skipper, really, of Sip and Sail. Troy, talk about some. I mean, you've got themed.
Yeah.
Events or evenings. Now talk about the different ones and really some of the foods that we would be eating.
Right. Oh, if I could just for out of clarification. So I launched it as Sip and Sail, and this year it's rebranded just because it's really what fits more, which is Sea Table.
Oh, it's Sea Table.
This year, yeah. Sorry for that confusion.
No, that's
my
bad.
It was previously known as, and now it's Sea Table DC. Yes. So we have 3 main experiences. There's a cruise experience, 2.5 to 3 hours, based on how many courses you choose. Okay, and that is for around $430 a guest. Mm-hmm. And then you choose your wines a la carte, or you can do a tasting of 5 wines.
But get into some of the courses. What are we eating?
Yeah, so you have an amuse that's inspiration based on seasonality. And I have a whole line of pickled items, which I'm working on currently. Support what's happening on the vessel.
I'm going to be pickled if I keep drinking this vodka.
So the accessories and things like that are also part of my pickling line that I'm working on. But I do a watermelon smoked sea salt basil olive oil and pickled watermelon rind as an amuse. Just something that's vibrant and fresh to start with champagne. Always, like, we love our champagne aboard.
Everybody's nodding, so I
right. If we just serve champagne,
either
all
that,
it's a great
their
day
heads
out there.
Are loose on their necks, but I think.
And then we do another 2nd course, which is usually some sort of chilled white carrot soup with yuzu pearls or something of that nature. Again, it's inspirational. And then the 2nd course, or the 3rd course, is, which is one of my favorites, a cherry blossom shoyu crudo of day boat scallop. And it's served in the shell atop the glass of Sancerre, so you have a pairing together. And it all comes out beautifully presented.
I see Susan nodding.
Yeah.
So something must have sounded good there.
So we do that. And then, like, the last 2 courses are shared courses, seafood, expansive on the table, lots to share.
But if I don't want to do that and I just want to do oysters galore and champagne, I can do that too, right?
You can do that. That's more of a bite-sized cruise. It's 1.5 to 2 hours, or 1.5 hours, and it's $225 a person. You pick how many oysters you want. You pick your champagne or your wines.
I think
and
it's
we sweep
also
you away.
Important to mention, you don't have to cruise. You can stay at the dock. In other words, if somebody's worried, oh, I want to do this, but I might get seasick if the wind picks up and it's choppy, you can just stay at the dock and do the same thing.
Right.
But it's a glorious, vista out on the river.
That's right. Yeah.
Nice. All right. Tell everybody how to find you online, how to find you on Insta, how to find you in the world.
Yeah, so it's ctabledc.com, C as in S-E-A, not the letter, but C, spell it out, ctabledc. At ctabledc is the Instagram, and also on Talk. You can just Google search any of those words as well, and it pulls up pretty easily, and then it routes you on your website, and you can just, again, on Talk Reservations, find the date, and it just walks you through. Menu-wise, it's we do one menu, however, it's customizable, of course, for allergies and dietary.
Great.
And then larger groups, over 6, I partner with Nautiste, who's a dear friend and colleague of mine, for experiences on larger vessels.
Okay.
She runs two vessel, other 70 up to 70 foot large vessel that we can host so, the 13 underway.
If I want to get married again. All right.
Yeah. There we go. Thank you.
Thank you, Troy. That's great. Listen, I love me my entrepreneurs. This is all good. So let's get back to Kim and Chanel. Chanel, talk a little bit about the distributor side of your life. Oof. Are you working largely with just women distillers, or is it across the board?
I have a mix. I have a mix of women and men producers. Of course, we search for craft artisanal spirits, boutique brands, those that have something, some type of USP, something that's very unique, like Wisher, right? And so we have a good mix between...
How do you find them? I mean, do you travel the country?
We attend a lot of exhibitions, expos,
and
then they find us as well.
Huh? I said I'm an exhibitionist, by the way.
Hence how we find you.
On the news.
But yeah, if we're not seeking out brands, brands are constantly being created every day, and every brand needs distribution, so they're seeking us out. And obviously we're a small distributor, so we don't take on every brand that, comes our way. We do have a tasting panel that most brands go through when they come into our portfolio. The tasting panel consists of 9 individuals. These are all industry-related individuals, so food and beverage managers, bartenders, liquor store owners, and they rate these brands based on a rubric scorecard. They know nothing about the brands other than what they see in front of them. And based on how the brands measure from our tasting panel, that's how we decide what brand to bring in our portfolio next.
So there's a science to it.
Well, yeah. And who better, to speak on, what would be a good brand to enter into a market other than a liquor store owner, a food and beverage manager. These are the individuals that come into contact with these brands frequently, and they are the decision makers behind what comes into their establishment. So those are who sit on our tasting panel.
Huh. All right. Well, when we come back, I want to talk to you both about the subject I raised earlier, which is maybe a very crowded, overly crowded, competitive field and what's happening in that respect. So we'll be back with you guys later. Brian, step up to the bar, boy.
Yes, sir.
Brian Nixon is back on the show after a couple of years.
Like 7, probably.
General,
I thought you didn't like me anymore.
Well, I was so exhausted. No, I was so exhausted from your first appearance.
That's fair.
It took me 7 years to recover.
Yeah.
Brian is the general manager of McClellan's Retreat. Brian, talk a little bit about McClellan's.
McClellan's is it's a cute little cocktail bar where upper DuPont Circle next to where the old Russia House used to be. We've got about 250, 270 whiskeys right now. We've been picking out a lot of new single barrels. We change out our cocktail menu like every 6 weeks now. Just have a lot of fun when we have people come in,
Why McClellan?
We've got a statue up the street, actually.
George McClellan?
Yep, George McClellan, the Civil War general that was known for retreating. He wasn't known for engaging the enemy.
Lincoln said he kept trying to get him to attack, and he wouldn't do it, and Lincoln said he has the slows.
He has the slows. My personal favorite was when he asked, if you're not using that army, can I have it back?
Can I have it back,
yes.
Right? All right, so I don't know. When did McClellan's open?
We're going to be 10 years in November, if you can believe it. I'm actually kind of shocked by it myself, but... Yeah, we're building up to that this year as we've been doing things. And when more and more barrel releases, more and more little private parties with our guests. I mean, during the pandemic, we were closed for 3 days. And from there, we just started building more and more people on a mailing list. I've got 700 or so people that I send out little missives to once every couple of weeks, let them know what's going on.
You got a big day coming up. Let's talk about St. Patrick's
Day. Let's talk about St. Patrick's Day.
I've never been one of those people that had to wear, people, you got to wear green to work today, and we got to go drink green beer and all that. Ostensibly St. Patrick's Day celebrates the man that drove the snakes out of Ireland. I hate to tell everybody, there never were any snakes.
There were no snakes. Yeah, that is not true. Yes.
So it's a BS. It's a BS excuse to drink a lot. What do you guys do for St. Patty's Day?
Generally we play it down a lot because we're not actually an Irish bar, and that's one of the big misconceptions about McClellan's, is that people come in and go, oh, this must be like a great little Irish bar because we're dark, we've got a lot of dark wood, and it feels kind of warm and cozy like an Irish bar. But McClellan wasn't Irish. He was actually a teetotaler. He actually didn't drink at all.
He was an unbelievably unappealing human being, is what he was.
Yes, yes. I mean, to run left of Lincoln is really a kind of confusing thing for me. But, yeah, I mean, but this year we decided, like, right before the pandemic, we were going to just embrace it and just really go all out for St. Paddy's Day. And then we had a global pandemic. So we just stopped doing that. And I think we're finally to that point where we can actually embrace it again. But we're going to do it on a slightly smaller scale. We're going to do a private whiskey tasting with a dancer who's going to come in and educate people on a bunch of different kinds of whiskey.
Now, the whiskeys come from
all Irish.
All Irish.
It's all Irish whiskeys, yeah. We've got Slane. We've got Pierce Lyons, which I visited when I was in Dublin this past year. We've got Jameson, obviously. And then we've also got John L. Sullivan, which is in this delicious cocktail I've been passing out right now, which is an Irish Old Fashioned with the John L. Sullivan, a little bit of a Barrow's Intense ginger liqueur out of New York. And this Antique Amaro out of Hungary.
Does everybody here know who John L. Sullivan was? Anybody?
I do.
You tell them.
He was the last reigning bare knuckle boxing champion. Yeah, super cool guy. I think, what was it, like 720 bouts or something like that?
Right. I mean, if you ever see a picture of a guy with his fists up in that old weird old way they used to box, that's John L. Sullivan.
That's John L. Sullivan. Yeah, he even had the funny mustache. It was great, you know.
So, question about like Jameson, because, you know, if you ask people about Irish whiskeys, Jameson always comes up.
Is that
just marketing? I mean,
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, if you start reading about the history of Irish whiskey as well, I mean, for a while, the Irish like literally ran the entire world as far as whiskey and that sort of thing. And then it kind of just dropped off.
Hello,
and it's
prohibition.
Up. Yeah. Well, it wasn't even prohibition. It was just, you know, you had a famine, you had, you know, people leaving and just a lot of the distilleries closing down. So, you know, it's kind of cool to be seeing them being on an upswing.
All right. Is everybody tasting it? All right.
Yeah,
cheers, everybody.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Outstanding.
All right. Let's see. It's got a nice little kick.
You know, it's morning. You're supposed to have a little, you know, eye-opener.
So I can come to McClellan's and drink myself into a tizzy. What about food? What do you serve?
We have a really light menu. It's more to keep people drinking. A few sandwiches, a really nice cheese and charcuterie board, you know. Popcorn is what people know us for, the grilled cheese people love.
Wait a minute. You're known for your popcorn?
As odd as that sounds, yeah. Yeah, we make it fresh on site, and people just really dig it. We use really good quality olive oil, you know. It's a bunch of different toppings you put on it. You know, it's just kind of fun, you know.
Well, all these chefs are going like,
yeah, right. Like a popcorn.
Yeah, popcorn.
That guy.
Popcorn guy. All right.
Right. There you go. See?
Want to take a break?
Yeah, another reason for you to come visit. Look at that. Hey.
All right. So, what else is planned for the whiskey tasting?
Well, we got the whiskey tasting. And then after the whiskey tasting, we're going to have a ticketed event for like another 40 people or so. And then we'll have drink specials. We've got some flights that are going to be on offer. We've got just a lot of fun.
Are you going to do like the stereotypical green beer and all that?
No. But we did bring in Guinness just for that day. So that'll be fun.
Oh, that would be fun.
Yeah.
Turn it into a pub.
Right, exactly. That's exactly what the idea is. But we like to keep our parties a little bit smaller so everybody really enjoys themselves.
Oh, awesome. All right. We're going to take a break. Brian, thanks. Why don't you tell everybody where McClellan's is? Give them the street address and all of that.
Absolutely. We are located at 2031 Florida Ave Northwest. You can find us on Instagram at MCC Retreat. And if you've got any questions, you're welcome to email our info account. You can also find it on the website, which is www.mcclellansretreat.com.
Awesome. Thanks, Brian.
Absolutely.
All right. I think we're going to take a break. Let's take a break, Andy. This is David Nellis on Foodie and the Beast, missing my wife. But she'll be back next week. I'm scoring points, though. Big points. All right. We'll be right back. All right. We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We've got a great show today. I want to bring Chanel Turner and Kimberly LaRose. So beautiful, lyrical. Kimberly LaRose. Yeah, damn, that's a real name. But I want to bring you guys back. Kimberly is a relatively new owner of a distillery. And Chanel's been in the biz a long time. Talk, first of all, if I recall correctly, you know, the pandemic was
crippling.
Well, it was crippling. I mean, a lot of distillers, you know, they dropped back and punted a little and started making a hand sanitizer.
Yeah.
But, but.
It worked.
I know. And it was delicious. wait, you weren't supposed to drink it too? No wonder I'm a mess. But also there was this blossoming of people who were like, my job's gone or whatever, or, you know, or I've always wanted to do this.
Yep.
And they popped open distilleries, and there was this blossoming of that, really, and, you know, and again, I love the entrepreneurial spirit. I love that people, you know, in the cases of the, like the folks that opened up Catoctin Creek, they had never distilled Diddly Squat. Yeah. And they started, and now they're, you know, they're very successful. So talk a little bit about that and why, you know, a lot of, I mean, you saw a lot of women coming into it for the first time.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a guy's club for centuries, really. Yeah. But what do you think was the, you know, kind of the impetus for that?
I think more representation and visibility of women in the industry gave a lot of other women the opportunity to say, hey, I can do this as well. You know, when I started in 2009, now we're in 2024, there were very little women.
Yeah, we had you on the show.
Yeah.
And you were...
and it was, and still very much is a male-dominated industry. But as time progressed and you started to see more women faces as owners and proprietors of spirits, then it made other women feel comfortable to say, hey, let me enter into this industry. I can't tell you how many women since I've started have come to me for mentorship and, you know, finding ways to navigate this industry because they jumped into it, but not really knowing and understanding what it really takes.
That's what really blows my mind. I mean, usually an entrepreneur, you know, kicks off something. I mean, Troy's an example. He's got a background in hospitality. He's, you know, he was already a success story, mm-hmm. and he morphed into, you know, what he's morphed into.
Right.
But I mean, you got people with no experience at all who say, I'm going to be a distiller.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's what we did.
How the hell do I do that?
And you know, unfortunately, you know, for some, you know, it's garnered great results. And for others, they've paid to learn, right? This industry is unforgiving when it comes to, you know, getting your product out there into the market and competing with the mainstream brands because obviously they don't want anyone disrupting, you know, their share of revenue in this market. And so a lot of the new brand owners, you know, some who started since the pandemic, some of them are not here today. Like they created their product during the pandemic, but not here today because to sustain a liquor brand is so much more than just finalizing a product. You have to get out there, beat the pavement.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got to.
If you're not out there beating the
pavement,
especially
if
you don't have the resources. When I say resources, I mean people and money. If you don't have the resources to really get out there and pay someone to do it for you, you have to beat the payment, get new clients, get new customers, and then hope that, okay, the store picks it up, hope that the people come in and buy it. So then now you have to schedule tastings and introduce the product to individuals that frequent the store.
Sure.
And, you know, just staying above water in this industry can be very difficult if you don't, one, have a good product, right? A lot of... I'm going to be frank. There were a lot of crappy brands that were created.
Those were the ones that were hand sanitized.
There were a lot of crappy brands that were created, you know, during the pandemic. And, you know, and that's because, again, a lot of manufacturers were just looking for ways to keep their business running and say, hey, I can create you a product for this amount of money.
But, I mean, do you nurture, you know, do you take on brand where people, they might have a good product, but the rest of it is a total blank slate. Do you take them on and try and help, you know?
I've done it all.
Fledgling birdies fly?
You know, because I'm, you know, a brand owner myself, I know the pitfalls. I know all the red tape. So I've taken on brands that had a great product, but, you know, they didn't really want to support their product in as far as marketing and promotions. And then I've had...
Because they didn't want to spend the money or
they didn't want to spend the money. They didn't want to spend the money. And then I've had brands that... their product wasn't so great, but they were so enthusiastic about their brand. And they were so, when they got out there and spoke on it, I mean, I've had some crappy brands that sell because it's the individual that's selling the brand.
That's
right?
The name of my marketing agency, Crappy Brands That Sell.
I mean, you know, they're selling their story, right? They're selling their story, they're selling their experience, and people, they buy into that. They don't have the best product, but they buy into that individual.
Well,
it makes
a
difference.
Kim is kind of the nexus of both, you know, a good product and the will to promote. She brought in a box today. This is your kickoff box, right?
It is, yes.
But I mean, I'm looking,
NFT
you know,
box.
There's a flask, there's a, you know, a big bottle of vodka, there's, let's talk about the other stuff in here. And what did you do with it? There's a shaker. There's all kinds. There's
a
glass.
We were the first spirit of the metaverse and the first to ever sell through cryptocurrency. So we launched our brand this way just on the backside of COVID, we wanted to bring together people from the URL to the IRL, we say, like meet people where they were at the time.
Listen to this spiel. Go, go, go.
So this was our way of offering it at home, and we sold our first 600 bottles before we ever walked into a real retail store by marketing this way. And
so this was a direct purchase and in mail order, basically.
Yes, yeah, so it was mailed, and you would receive six bottles, and one of them is numbered and signed, and one of the first 1,156 off the line.
This all came out of your brain, or did you have a marketing agency that helped you put it
together?
It was
our team. I have an amazing team. My co-founder, Emily Gillis-Terry, and her husband, Alex Terry, they helped develop all of our marketing and do all of our branding and really came up with this great idea.
This is spectacular. But let me get Chanel back in here, because for the last 90 seconds, we're talking about a winnowing out process. There are a lot of people that made it this far, and now they're the field is very crowded.
It is. So, right now the in thing is tequila and whiskey, right? Tequila and whiskey, you see people are spinning up new tequilas and new whiskeys, and those who can't get to Mexico to get a tequila to create it, then they're creating an agave spirit, right? So the space is getting crowded, but it's one of those things in this industry where what's in right now? And so for right now, it's tequila and whiskey, and so everybody wants to create that. They've kind of left us vodka people alone for a little bit, and we're okay with that. We're okay. Saturate the market with tequila.
And I think you have to keep reinventing yourself, too. Yeah. You know, this was our launch, but this isn't what we do now. Now we're really sharing the healthy lifestyle of the healthy ingredients and the gluten-free and the grain-free. So you have to continue to reinvent yourself as a brand and not just, you know, think that everyone's going to take what you're selling every day.
In liquor sales, I mean, I know, like, supermarkets, there are shelving fees. In other words, if you've got a product and you want it on the shelf, you pay a premium to get it up there. Is the same hold true in your world? Payola?
It is in this industry, and you know, they retailers won't directly tell you you got to pay to play, but you got to pay to play, and they won't take money directly from you. There's other ways they'll find to get that, but again, you have to pay to play.
Wow. All right. Well, I want to thank you both, Kim. First of all, both of you, tell us where to find you in the world, online and.
So for Foudre Vodka, we're on Instagram at Foudre Vodka.
FOUDRE.
That's right. And so Foudre.com as well. For our distribution company, anybody looking to enter into the Maryland, D.C. market, we also got our distribution license in Texas. So anybody looking to get into Texas as well, we're globalalliancedistribution.com.
All right. Kim, hit it.
WisherVodka.com. You can find us across all social media, our website. Everything is Wisher Vodka. And you can give us a taste at Periodic Table in Columbia, Maryland. And Galliano's Italian Restaurant is featuring us now, a couple of these cocktails that we tasted today. So you can stop in there and taste it as well. And at our website, you can find all of our current locations.
Great. Thanks so much. All right. Well, we're nearing the end of the show. Usually, Nikki gives me about 90 seconds to vent my spleen about whatever's bothering me, and I have a little more time. I don't understand what is wrong with the United States Congress. Does anybody know what's wrong? I know what's wrong with them. A bunch of numbskulls. If we don't send money to Ukraine, they're going to lose this war, and a lot more people are going to die and be displaced. And if anybody thinks in their right mind that Vladimir Putin is going to stop in Ukraine, they're on drugs, frankly. And if anybody thinks that if you know who ever gets back to the White House, he's going to stop Vladimir Putin, they're smoking something too. So I would urge our Congress to please support Ukraine with money and arms so they can stop this guy. And I urge all of you to, whether it's a dollar, $10, whatever, send money to the Red Cross, send money to Jose. There are millions of refugees, both in and outside Ukraine, and that goes through the Middle East too. Send money to the Red Crescent, send money to the Red Cross. You know, we all live a pretty safe and cushy life, and I don't know if we take it for granted or not, but we're all here in this studio, and everybody's healthy and happy and smiling and having fun, and around the world there are people hungry and sick and dying, so let's help them out. That is it. That's the end of this show. Nikki will be back next week, and I'll be, you know, relegated to my subservient status again, being browbeaten and abused. But, you know, I'll be here, and I want to thank everybody. It was a great show, and you guys all have great products and great desserts. Yeah. All right. That's it. We'll see you next week. Have a great day.